You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Spring training is almost over, and everybody's celebrating that because opening day is right around the corner, and the Arizona Diamondbacks have put together most of their roster with a couple of question marks still remaining. Let's catch up with Steve Gilbert on all of that. I'm Allison Futter. Steve, let's start off with Gregor Blanco, who didn't quite seem to be ready for the regular season. They released him, and I guess they re-signed him because they think that he can still contribute this season, right?
Yeah, he's one of those players, Allison, that qualified as a double XB free agent, which, without getting into all the technicalities, they had until Tuesday. We were recording this on Tuesday. They had until this morning to either add him to the 40-man roster and give him a spot in the big leagues, or give him a $100,000 bonus and send him to the minor leagues, or release him. And so they released him and then re-signed him back. He's got an injured oblique. He probably would have made the team without that injured oblique. But they just didn't want to take a chance that he was going to be ready in time for opening day. And roster spots are kind of at a premium right now, 40-man spots, as they try to add a few guys. So they released him and re-signed him less than a day later. We talked to him this morning. He said he just really felt good about this organization and about his chances in this organization. And so he agreed to come back for basically the same contract he signed during the offseason. But for rule technicality purposes, they had to release him and re-sign him.
Okay. So other guys that are not going to make the team that are sort of names that we are familiar with Ruby De La Rosa, he's just continuing to sort of work his way back.
Yeah, he's working his way back from that elbow issue that he had last year. He says he's feeling good, and it looks like he might be able to avoid having that second Tommy John surgery. And to be careful with him, they're going to pitch him out of the bullpen, at least for the near term. So he'll go down to AAA and pitch out of the bullpen, and could be a guy that really helps the Diamondbacks out this year if he's able to stay healthy.
So you've got a nice little opening day shortstop competition going on. It looks like maybe it's three guys, maybe two. What's that looking like with less than a week to go till opening day?
Yep, down to two guys now. They sent Ketel Marte down this morning, just before our conversation here, actually. They announced that they were sending him down to AAA, so it's down to Chris Owings and Nick Ahmed. And it's been a spirited battle. You know, these guys have been in the organization the last few years, and it always seems like it comes down to who's going to start at shortstop. And Owings has had an outstanding spring with the bat. Ahmed is probably the superior defender simply because he is just such a really good defender. It's not that Owings is not a good defender. So it's going to be fascinating to see, you know, what Torey Lovello ends up doing in terms of who his everyday shortstop is, or at least on opening day, who his shortstop is going to be.
Yasmani Tomas, he's also returning from an oblique strain. Lots of oblique strains. First of all, how is he doing? And second of all, there seems to be a rash of these things breaking out all over the place. Have you noticed that at all?
Yeah, it seems to be like every spring there's one kind of injury that everybody seems to get, and this spring it's the oblique injury. But Tomas has played the past couple days. He's in the lineup again today. Seems like he's going to be healthy for opening day. There was some real concern as to whether or not he'd be ready because, you know, he hadn't played in so long. I think March 5th or March 6th was the last time he had gotten in a game before earlier this past week. So looks like he's going to be good to go as the opening day left fielder.
Interesting. And the rotation has been set. I don't know. I'm looking at this rotation, and I like it. Of course, I think I said the same exact thing last year. I really thought that the Diamondbacks were going to be something that they obviously were not last year, but we all did. But I don't know. I like this. Frankie Walker, Robbie Ray, Shelby Miller, Patrick Corbin. I don't know. It seems like it's got some potential there.
There's definitely potential there. I mean, and again, it would take Greinke to return to his usual form, Shelby Miller to be the pitcher they thought they were getting in that trade last year, Robbie Ray continuing to take a step forward with his pitch efficiency, lasting deeper in the game. Patrick Corbin seemed to kind of rediscover his form in a bullpen last year, and he's looked good this spring, so they're optimistic. You know, he was going to be their opening day starter just a few years ago before he had Tommy John surgery. So there's a lot of potential up and down that rotation. It's just a matter of, are the younger guys able to take the next step, and are some of the veterans able to have bounce back seasons or pitch like they're capable of doing?
So now that we're heading into opening day, let's talk realistic expectations. I mean, if you could select a number of wins that would signify a good season for the Diamondbacks, moving in the right direction, but a realistic amount of wins. A number of wins, given the division that they play in and the fact that there's, teams that have improved in that division. What number would you pick?
Wow, that's a great question. I'll say off the top of my head, without thinking about it, I'll say 79 wins, an improvement of 10 wins would be a definite step forward for them. I think the key thing for them, at least in my mind, is getting off to a good start. Last year, as you recall, that they got off to a poor start. I think everything started to snowball on them, particularly the pitchers that first time through the rotation. It just started a bad spiral. So that would be my key for them, is getting off to a good start. If they're able to put together 79 wins, that's a step forward. And if everything were to come together for them, given their everyday lineup, if that pitching staff were able to hold it together, I think they could win more than 79, but they would need a lot of things to go right.
Absolutely. Okay, so you recently talked to Torrey Lovello about the upcoming season, so we're going to run that interview. Here it is.
Hi, I'm Steve Gilbert with MLB.com. I'm sitting with Torrey Lovello here, first-year manager of the Diamondbacks. We're about a week away from spring training when this is going to air and from the regular season starting.
Yeah.
How are you? How have you felt about the way spring training has gone so far?
I mean, I can't be more pleased up to this point. We have asked these guys to run through a lot with as far as their physical activity, and they've addressed all the needs we have. We have some small things that we've tweaked and changed, and those are just my philosophies that I've incorporated here. These concepts have been really addressed, and they're knocking it out at the right pace. We hit a little hiccup there with the heat, so we took some downtime, but we're ready to ramp this thing up and get ready for opening day.
Now, you managed a couple months in Boston filling in for John Farrell, but this will be your first opening day as a manager, and your team, expect some nerves come opening day?
There's no doubt about it. No matter what anybody says, whether you've been a manager in the big leagues for 10 years or not, you're going to feel that sense of urgency and that anxiety. So I actually like that feeling. I might be one of the few that enjoy the feeling of being scared or having some anxiety. So I've learned to cope with it my whole life. But it's the same whether you're in Little League, whether you're in high school or the major leagues. Opening day is opening day. It has such great expectations. And I feel like I'm a little kid out there, and I'm sure that's what's going to happen on the second.
And what are your expectations for this year? What are you kind of, after seeing your team now for the better part of 4 or 5 weeks, what kind of you expect heading in?
Well, what I've discovered is that we've got a really good core group of players that know how to carry the torch. They've united with one another. We are a band of brothers. It seems like this is a family that's going to move in the right direction. So I think that they're ready to walk together and see where it takes them each and every day. I don't want to say whether we're going to win or lose. I don't want to make any predictions. What I will say is we're going to compete every single night and see where that takes us. And we also have to do is we've got to earn things. And I've been saying this from the very beginning. We didn't have a very good year last year, so I want us to be a smart, tough baseball team that's going to go out and earn everything they deserve.
Last question. Do you have a feel for kind of the style of your team after watching it?
Well, I know we're going to be offensively orientated, but that doesn't mean we can't win games or we're not equipped to win games 2-1. And we scored a number of runs last year. We have some of the same guys back from last year, so we don't want to change that. So I don't necessarily think I'm going to have a style that I'm going to try and incorporate. I want to just kind of get out of their way, see how the flow of the game is going. And we've practiced so many things that we're going to be able to call on whatever we need to do on a given game to execute and help us win the ball.
Fundamental type things, defense type things.
I think defense. So. Defensive fundamentals are really important to me. I know that we're going to make mistakes, and that happens in this game. And that's why there's a column with an error on it, right? So you know that those things happen, and you make mistakes hitting, and you make mistakes pitching. But we want to limit those moments, and we want to be able to kind of counterpunch. And if we can counterpunch the opposition and be prepared for the opposition, we know that it's going to carry us.
Torrey, thanks a lot for your time, and best of luck in the upcoming season.
Thank you, Steve. Always a pleasure.
Everyone is packing up and heading home after a very long spring training, including the San Francisco Giants, and including Chris Haft, who is packing up as we speak. So let's catch up with him. I'm Allison Footer. Chris, you are trying to get that suitcase under 50 pounds, and we're also trying to figure out what's going on with the fifth starter front and how this rotation is going to shape out. So Let's start off with Ty Block. He seems to be right in there. He had a really good outing. I liked your story where you said, like, it's kind of, you know, can you get through like a third time in the a third time through the lineup? That sort of signifies a decent starter, and Ty Block certainly had signs that he might be able to do that in his last outing. So what's the latest on him?
I think a lot's going to depend. That doesn't take a lot of thinking on how Matt King does, how Matt King would do later on their final game in Arizona on Tuesday. The feeling is that the Giants wanted Matt Cain to just take the job, but he really didn't. He pitched marginally, you know, okay, but, you know, Ty has outperformed him so far in spring. I think it's, I don't think there's any, you know, question about that. But what do you do with Matt Cain? I mean, he makes $20 million a year. He has a, you know, he has a position of status. You could stay on the team as the, you know, longest tenured Giant, you know, since August 2005. So, yes, they want to treat him with respect. You know, they also are in the business of winning ball games. The Giants are. So, you know, there's a lot of different scenarios. Maybe Cain will quote-unquote suffer an injury and begin the season in extended spring training and, you know, still trying to get his stuff and deception back. Maybe Cain will be the number five starter, but Block will make the bullpen crew. We've got different permutations here.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the Giants want Cain to make this rotation because they're paying Cain a lot of money, and that's really kind of what it comes down to. it's really unfortunate. I mean, you do have to take it to the very last second to make this decision when it comes to that situation, right? I mean, they just have to make sure that there's really not they have to come to the conclusion that there's no chance that Matt Cain's going to be able to get out in this rotation before they can really move on anything.
Well, yeah, I mean, they want him to do well. They really want him to do well. He showed some signs his last out, and he gave up 3 runs and 4 hits against Milwaukee and just didn't look good at all. But then he settled down. So, you know, do you base your decision on that first inning or on the final 4 innings when he allowed, like, 1 run and 3 hits? So, you know, and that ability to fight back, you know, that's what you want out of a pitcher. So, who knows?
So what about some other position battles here? Tim Fedorowicz, which you're telling me that everyone calls him Tim FedEx. So he's been working with Block, but he's also just been having a really nice spring. Of course, there's not room for him because he's got a couple of catchers ahead of him. But they really like what they've seen from him this spring, haven't they?
Really like what they've seen, Allison. And I remember him, especially from his days with the Dodgers. You know, he was always a tough out. Seemed like he handled the pitchers well. Not a whole lot to complain about. I mean, you know, it's definitely an asset for a club. Maybe not a starter quality catcher, but definitely a good backup. And good backup catchers don't grow on trees. There may be some opportunities for him elsewhere in the major leagues. And if one comes up, Bobby Evans, the Giants general manager, will not hold Tim Fedorowicz back. He'll let Tim walk, which is very fair.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last time we talked, we were waiting for kind of a diagnosis on Will Smith. Now we have a diagnosis, which is that he's having Tommy John surgery. A huge bummer, just a big bummer for him and for the team. But it sounds like it's going to be open season on who fills that spot. They don't seem to have there are a lot of names being thrown out there about who's going to get these late inning appearances in his place.
Yes, Allison, I think these last 4 exhibition games, the one final Cactus League game today and the 3 Bay Bridge Series games back in the Bay Area, I think they'll be I think Bruce Bochy will use them as a proving ground, so to speak, for you know, guys wanting to going for a setup role.
Okay, and I want to ask you one last question on something totally unrelated. That would be Huey Lewis coaching, showing up to coach a spring training game for somebody who kind of liked him in the 80s. So this piqued my interest a little bit. What was the story behind that? I know he's a Giants fan. He's from there, right?
Yeah, he's from north of the, you know, I want to say Marin, Novato area. I don't know how many people out there know Novato, but most people are probably familiar with Marin County. Yeah, big Bay Area sports fan. I think he kind of likes the Cubs. He showed up last year when they played the Cubs. He showed up at Mesa. I'm not saying he's a front runner or anything, but you know, he has the right to change his allegiance if he wants, but no, he routinely sang the anthem at 49er games, and you know, occasionally at Candlestick Park, and you know, the Giants' previous home, in particular. But yeah, but he knows Bruce from, I think, maybe from some maybe celebrity golf functions too and stuff like that, and so they have a bit of a relationship. And he was in town. He came by. Didn't get a chance to talk to him, but I know I took a really. I knew the night before, because Bruce said something. I guess the day before, that he was going to be in town. So I was kind of on the lookout for him, and because I wasn't on the lookout for him, I might not have noticed him. I mean, it's not that he's changed, but you're just not programming your mind to think, you know, ballpark equal sign Huey Lewis, you know. So
that's very true. Yeah, I mean, he looks very, he blends in very well. I remember the World Series a couple years ago. Yeah, he was on the field during batting practice. I believe he had some kind of role during the pregame ceremony. I think it was like play ball, like yelling out play ball.
Right.
But if you're not looking for him, he does absolutely just kind of blend into the, he does not look like a superstar kind of guy. He's very understated.
Well, he seems like a really good guy. Really, you know, I hate to say, use the word normal, but as normal as anybody can be for a, you know, guy who has about, you know, 10 gold records or whatever.
Yeah, he seems like a pretty nice guy. So, yeah. And it's always fun to, like, have something different like that happen when you've covered 87 straight days of spring training or whatever it was.
Oh, sure.
So. Okay. All right, Chris, so we're going to end this. You recently talked to Bruce Bochy about the upcoming season, and we're going to run that interview. Here it is.
The feeling of optimism here, I sense, at least, is, seems real and genuine, not forced at all. Well, how do you...
Well, it is. I think you look at... you know, our history here in just the last 5-6 years, you know, with the success that we've had, I mean, we expect more out of ourselves, and we come in here full of optimism. I mean, we have a lot of the same club that's won 3 championships here, you know, we have the Posies and Belts and Crawfords, and Baumgartners, all these players that we built within our system. And so you come in here and you get ready for a season expecting to do good things.
There aren't a whole lot of openings. Well, I guess there's several openings on the roster. I would think you're satisfied that guys are seem to be having or winning jobs and you're not having to pick like the lesser 2 or 3 evens. Guys are going out and
Yeah, and competition is a good thing. It is. I think it brings out the best in players. You know, they have to play under pressure, I guess you could say, trying to win a job. And that's not a bad thing either. Now, the tough part is when you have a lot of great guys in camp. And you get toward the end of camp where we're at this stage, and you got to make some very difficult decisions. You know, that's the part that's tough for all of us, because we do care about these guys, but now we have to, you know, get down to 25 guys. The 25 we think makes us the best club and gives us the best chance to get to where we want to go.
On paper, at least, the starting rotation looks like it shapes up to be one of the best you've had here. How do you see that?
Well, they're the reason that you know, we had success last year. I know we had struggles in the bullpen, but you look at the first half, and we were one of the best clubs in baseball. Signing Melanza, that was huge for us. It's a lot easier building down and trying to find that closer, but we feel like we have the arms that are capable of being good setup guys. You look at the rotation, which you're talking about. I couldn't be happier. I mean, you got 2 number one guys with Baum and Cueto, and then, of course, Wade Moore threw the ball. Samardzija, I think, has come off a good year. He gives everything we had hoped. All the innings, large body of work that saved the bullpen. And, of course, at this spot, you know, we're staying open-minded there with Matt Cain and Block. And down the road, you're going to have candidates like, you know, Suarez or Beanie.
the Padres are preparing for opening day, and things are starting to come together a little bit in that roster. So let's talk to A.J. Casavell about all of that. I am Allison Fitter. A.J., first things first, opening day starter. They have named him, and it is Julius Chacin. So what was the thinking behind that move?
Well, I mean, it kind of lined up the best. And if you talk to the Padres, they really liked the fact that he pitched in the World Baseball Classic, the fact that he's already been in a big game environment. He's pitched on opening day before in 2013 as well. I spoke with pitching coach Darren Balsley today. I think you should expect to see a different Julius Chacin. If you've watched him over the past couple years, he's maybe more fastball changeup heavy. Not necessarily heavy, but he's thrown those pitches a lot more. I think this year you'll see sinkers and sliders, and that's kind of where the Padres are going with him. They view him in the same kind of Drew Pomeranz mold where they got Drew Pomeranz, told him to throw a bunch of curveballs, and it worked out because curveballs is his best pitch. Well, Chacin's slider is his best pitch. He didn't throw it a ton last season, especially he didn't throw it to left-handed hitters. So I think the Padres think they have something with Chacin and with maybe his pitch mix, tinkering with it. They also like the experience that he has and the fact that he's built up better than any other pitcher because of his time in the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah, I guess that makes a little bit of sense, and you might as well get some experience there as everyone's trying to get their feet wet on this Padres roster. Another familiar name would be Ibar, who's going to be the opening day shortstop. So what was just tell us about that progression and what he did to prove that he deserves that job.
Well, he played well this spring. I think more than anything, it tells you where Luis Sardinas is in his progression. He did not have a very good spring. He looked a little bit better defensively, but at the plate, he really wasn't driving the baseball at all. So he is kind of thrown into some roster flux. It's kind of unclear where he'll land because he is out of options, but there really kind of doesn't look like a spot on the roster for him. So it'll be interesting to follow what he does for the next week, because I know the Padres were excited to get him last year. But as far as Ibar, he hasn't done anything wrong this spring. I mean, he's hit the ball well. He's played very solid defense at shortstop. And I think more than anything else, the Padres really like the fact that he was mentoring Alan Cordoba and Luis Sardinas. They're constantly around his locker asking him questions. And those are the two guys that might have been the guys that took his spot. So he's a veteran presence. I'm not a big fan of giving the roster spot to a guy just because he's a good clubhouse guy. But at the same time, Luis Sardinas didn't earn it. Eric Ibar did. So you want to give roster spots to guys that earn it. And Ibar hasn't done anything wrong in spring. Andy Green was quick to say if he doesn't perform, he won't be the shortstop. But right so far, he has performed, and he's got that job going into the opener.
Yeah, this will probably be an ongoing flow of roster movement throughout, I'm sure, like the first month or so of the season until they sort of get settled. So the other newsy item that we have is Carter Capps, who's going to start the season on the DL, but there seems to be some optimism as far as his future also. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, he's starting the year on the DL. He's pretty much almost fully recovered from Tommy John surgery. He had surgery, I believe it was last March 8th. So it's about 12 and a half months. Usually the progression is 14 months at best. So he's ahead of schedule, but he's not quite ahead of schedule enough to the point where he's going to be on the opening day roster. So the Padres are taking it safe with him. They've said all along they think April 3rd is an artificial date. Now Carter Capps, he was dying to get on that opening day roster, but it's the Padres' job to kind of to treat him as a guy recovering from Tommy John surgery. So if he's not a full go by April 3rd, they're not going to push him just so he can be there for opening day. If that means he makes his debut on April 13th, well, the Padres are happy because they have Carter Capps in their bullpen. And then once he gets back, I think he has every chance to compete for the closer spot. He won't be the closer right away, but they really like what they have in him, and I think he's going to be pitching high leverage innings at the back end of that bullpen.
I was running through your inbox. They have an opening day inbox that's very interesting, and of course I love talking about Manny Margot. And you brought up a good point about just like where he is, like contract status wise. I mean, if he spends X amount of days in the minor leagues, then they'll get an extra year of control over him, which is like huge. We see a lot of teams that hold back a star player until late April, just to get those days in so that they can control him another year. So that could factor into Margot, even though it looks like he's going to make the opening day roster, correct?
Yeah, it looks like it. I'm not as certain as I was before about that because Colin Cowgill has come back and he's producing at the plate. And Manny Margot hasn't had a full spring. He was bothered by a little bit of knee soreness. So there's legitimate reason to say, hey, maybe he should open the season at AAA, get a little bit more seasoning. And at the same time, you keep him there for 24 days at least, and you have a year of team control when he's 28 and presumably in his prime. So it's a roster decision, and ultimately the Padres could decide to bring him up, and if they want to get those 24 days in the minors, they could wait until Alex Dickerson comes back and he's healthy. Because I think at the beginning of spring the plan was maybe to start Margot at AAA, but the injuries in the outfield created a void that he might have needed to fill. Now it's up in the air. I think he might be the most interesting, the most on the bubble of all the roster guys entering the final week. And either way, I mean, Padre fans probably shouldn't mind either way, because in one scenario he's on the opening day roster, potentially even hitting leadoff on opening day against Clayton Kershaw, and in another they get another year of team control down the road. So he's going to be, from everything I've seen and everything I've heard, he has potential to be a star. Whether he starts the season with the Padres on April 3rd or it comes on May 1st, he's an impressive player.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, interesting stuff as always. And the last thing in our order here is just to talk to you talked to manager Andy Green. You did a little manager Q&A previewing the season, so we're going to listen to that right now.
All right, I'm here with Padres manager Andy Green, about to enter his second season at the helm of the Padres. So to start, Andy, what is different about this spring in terms of just the team, the roster makeup, and I guess the general vibe in camp?
Changed greatly. Last year was a veteran-laden roster coming into spring training. From the pitching side, you had Shields, Cashner, Ross, Fernando Rodney closing games out for you. Position player side, Kemp, Upton, just a lot of veteran players. This year you come in largely very, very young, probably the youngest team in Major League Baseball at this point in time. You're looking at a couple position players with over 1,000 career at-bats. But with the youth comes excitement, comes guys that, like, we believe in their upside. We believe what they can do. When you start talking about Hunter Renfro, you start talking about Austin Hedges, Manny Margot, and still Travis Jankowski is very, very young in the game. So it's changed radically in that regard, but I think there's reason for optimism.
It's a pretty broad question, but what did you learn from your first season as a manager?
It is a broad question, but I'd say, like, the one thing that you do when you're coaching in the minor leagues or managing in the minor leagues or coaching in the big leagues, your hands are on your players all the time. It's always your interaction with your players. When you manage, you work through a staff of 12 capable people that impact your players on a consistent basis. So it's shifting from being like a leader of men to a leader of leaders, and like helping them impact guys in a really positive way and create an organizational culture and a vibe that you want in place. And that's a challenge first time you get the opportunity to do that. So going into year two, I had much better handle on how to accomplish those kind of things.
Will Myers, obviously a guy the Padres locked up during the offseason for 6, possibly 7 years. What about him makes him the kind of guy that the city can maybe rally behind?
Will plays, he plays with passion. He plays with fervor. He plays with a smile on his face. He's competitive. There's no part of the game that he's not capable of impacting the game in. He's going to do it with a glove on his hand. He's going to do it with a bat in his hand. He's going to do it with his legs on the base pass. Like, he's capable of doing a lot. And we still, as an organization, believe he's just scratching the surface of who he is. At 26 years old, he's still very, very young. And at 26 years old, you're talking about a guy who had 28 home runs, stole 28 bases, hit 28 doubles last year. Those are easy numbers to remember when they're all 28s, but he's a guy that, like, the ceiling's still higher. He does have the capacity to have like a 370, 380 on base percentage. He does have the capacity to have a 900 to 1,000 OPS. He has a chance to do some really special things offensively in the game. I like where he is in spring training. I think he's taken 10 walks so far, which speaks to, like, growth and plate discipline. He's still driving the baseball out of the park and off the wall. So there's a lot to like in Will, and he's going to be an offensive catalyst for us this year and years to come.
Obviously, he sets a high bar. He, during the offseason, didn't predict, but is set a goal for a 40-40 season. Another guy the Padres locked up for the foreseeable future, Yonhervis Solarte, one of the most beloved players in that clubhouse. What about him makes him such a fan favorite and such a clubhouse favorite?
Well, first, he's a good player. He can hit. He can defend the field. We're looking at him at second base right now a little more than we looked at him at second base last year. Turns a double play very well. He's going to be a middle-of-the-order type hitter in our lineup, but to see him walk through what he walked through last year with his wife passing away and the father of 3 young girls, to see him do it and play baseball well and play baseball with a smile on his face, it's an impossible thing to understand how a person could do what he did last year. And he shows up at camp this year smiling, laughing, full of life. People gravitate to life, and he embodies that every day. And because of that, he's a type of leader that leads by example, and I think our young guys are inclined to follow.
You mentioned the young guys. This organization in the last year has gone through a drastic youth movement at all levels. How much are you in tune with what's going on in the single A, double A, triple A, in terms of bringing those guys along?
I'm very in tune. It's not me making decisions as to when these guys show up at the big league level, but I pay very, very close attention. Luis Urias yesterday was 2 for 3 with a walk. Like, I'm aware of what these guys do on a day-to-day basis when they step up and they hit and they play. I pay close attention to every game report. I call down and talk to managers. I spend time with minor league staff on a consistent basis because, like, I do truly believe that those guys are the lifeblood of our organization. If we're going to be great, we have to make radical investments in them, not just from a monetary perspective, but from a development perspective, from a human resource perspective, where you have great staff impacting them in a really powerful way. That's important to me because I get where our success is going to come from, and I think you see it starting to show up in the lower levels of the system now, and as it moves through the system, I think we have something like 50 guys so far this spring training that have already thrown 95 miles an hour or harder in the minor leagues. Like, we have a lot of talented pitchers. We got some talented young position players. It's going to be fun to watch their development, and look forward to them showing up here at Petco.
All right, last question. What would a successful 2017 season look like for the Padres?
You know, I've never been one to say, hey, you got to do this or do that from a win-loss perspective. But what our team desperately needs is the ability to focus regardless of external circumstances, the ability to lock in every single day and to play that game like it's the only game that matters in baseball. And if you do that, at the end of the year, you look up and your results are there. And if you do that, at the end of the year, you look up and the external pressures or expectations, they don't weigh on you. If you play with that freedom, then you play your best version of baseball. Our guys aren't there yet. To teach that, to instill that, to get guys to be that way, that'll be our separator in the long run, especially when expectations are going to run high, because it's not going to be far off when they start to run high for us. So we got to shed those external expectations. Right now, this year, we got to lock in on whatever game we got that day and learn to play it better than the other team.
All right, Andy. Thanks, and best of luck in 2017.
All right, thanks, AJ.
The Rockies are putting on the finishing touches before they embark on opening day, which is just around the corner. Let's catch up with Thomas Harding to see what is going on with those Rockies. I'm Allison Sutter. Thomas, so you are, as we are speaking to each other, watching John Gray throw in a minor league game. So I guess this is kind of the last final test on everything, and then if he gets through that okay, he will be set for opening day?
Correct. Yeah, it lines up perfectly, of course, with opening day. Bud Black hasn't named his rotation because he likes to name all those guys at once, and there was a competition at the back. The other bit of intrigue here is in his last start, Gray was removed after 2 2/3 innings because of a left big toe issue that really was kind of something from a previous start, and the Rockies pulled him for precaution because they thought he was trying to protect it. But he looks healthy. He sounds healthy when I've talked to him. It doesn't affect him pitching. It just affects him on pickoff moves, batting, and fielding. So if he's okay, then he gets to start in Milwaukee on Monday.
Okay, so how does the opening rotation round out?
Okay, you've got John Gray at the top of it, a very talented pitcher, 185 strikeouts, a Rockies rookie record. Tyler Anderson, who came up during last season and had a 3.00 ERA at Coors Field and really pitched well as a rookie, former number one pick like Gray. He'll be number two in the rotation. Third is Tyler Chatwood, who had the best ERA in baseball last year for a pitcher who threw as many as 80 road innings, struggled a bit at Coors Field, but he was coming off missing a year and a half with Tommy John surgery, so he'll be better. He'll be the number three. At the back of it, they'll be announcing it soon, I would imagine, but Kyle Freeland, number one pick in 2014, has really impressed in camp. He's able to attack both sides of the plate with his fastball, has really good breaking pitches, and he adds and subtracts to them. They could be slider, curve, slurve. He looks like he'll be number four, and he's a Denver native, so there's a lot of interest in Denver. At number five, right now, it looks like Antonio Senzatella, who made just 7 starts in Double-A last year because of some family issues and a couple of bouts with right shoulder soreness. But even going into last year, I thought he had the best arm of anybody in camp, and that included a number of top draft picks and highly regarded prospects. He could be at the back of this rotation, and also there's some depth in AAA because they've already sent Jeff Hoffman, the guy they got in the Tulowitzki trade. He was drafted one spot after Freeland. They've sent him down to AAA, and also Germán Márquez, who pitched some in the major leagues. And it looks like he'll be there if he isn't in the rotation. And that's a pretty good arm. The last guy I want to mention is Harrison Musgrave, a left-hander. It's possible they'll carry him in the bullpen to start the season, but then send him back to AAA. He's completely different from all these other guys in that he doesn't have lightning velocity or those things that make you a top prospect. But what he does is he throws strikes and wins games.
Okay, so that's settled. Are there any other position battles? What's going on as we head into these final few days of spring training before the season starts?
Well, the big one going into camp was in left field with Gerardo Parra and David Dahl, who came up last year as a rookie. Of course, Parra was injured for a bit of last year and did not have a very good year. But Parra's had an outstanding spring, and David Dahl has a rib injury that may keep him out until late April. So as far as the starting lineup is concerned, that's pretty much set. Mark Reynolds has stepped into the position he held last year at first base with Ian Desmond out. I believe that there are some things at the end of the game, talking about reserves off the bench, those things need to be settled in the final days of camp.
Okay, I'm sitting here looking at the Rockies website while you were talking to me, and I got totally, distracted because there's a video of you with Bud Black, and he's teaching you how to hold the ball to throw a changeup. How did that come about? I don't have the sound on. What happened?
It was great. And I have to say, R.D. Rowland, the video guy here with the Rockies, he caught that. What was happening, I was asking him about Márquez that I mentioned before. He was working on his changeup and just trying to get used to it. So Bud throws me a baseball and says, "How do you hold your fastball, Thomas Harding?" So I showed him a couple of grips, not that I have a fastball. So then he's like, "Okay." And he showed me the changeup grip. And that was how the video came up, the fact that it does feel weird to throw your arm in that motion with that grip, but you have to be able to use that motion in the same speed to get the batter to believe that a fastball was coming. So it was just a bit of teaching there, and I do appreciate Bud Black showing me how it's done. Maybe I can throw a changeup at, 18 miles an hour to go with my 30-mile-an-hour fastball.
Yes, well, I apologize for becoming distracted while you were talking, but that was very cool. So this would be a great time to lead into our last topic, which is that you recently caught up with Bud Black and had a nice little Q&A with him on previewing the season. So let's take a listen to that.
Here with Bud Black, and Bud, wanted to ask you, the culture and the talent level that you saw when you got here, what was your impression of it?
Well, from the other dugout for many years, watching Rocky baseball, you could tell that the players that were starting to develop, LeMahieu, Arenado, Blackman, to go along with Gonzalez, it was a nice core of position players. And then here comes Trevor Story, young David Dahl, the young catching. So from the other side, it looked really, really good and promising. And that's what I've seen now here in camp. The realization of these guys as big leaguers. Now we got to get the young starting pitching caught up with these fellas.
Speaking of that, you do have a lot of good young starting pitching. Can you compare this to any staffs that you've had in your career, as far as youth and talent? And can starting pitching this young, this talented, win big?
Well, here's the deal. I'm going to go back. I'll go back a couple generations or a generation. But you go back when the Kansas City Royals sort of turned over from 1983 to 1984. When you talk Brett Saberhagen, Mark Gubazaw, Danny Jackson, Charlie Liebrandt, all guys in the early to mid-20s who got a chance to pitch, and these fellas performed. So, that's my hope, that, our young pitchers, our young starters can get an opportunity, take that opportunity, run with it, and perform.
And to follow up, Bud Black being a part of that, how much does your experience help?
Well, again, at some point you're a young pitcher, right?
Right.
And sometimes it takes longer than, for some guys it takes a little longer. Fortunately, you know, out of rough rookie year, and then sort of found it, and you know, got better. But I'm hoping that, you know, between myself and our pitching coaches, you know, we can get some of these guys, you know, moving along a little quicker than it took me.
Chris, during your career, whether as a pitching coach in Anaheim or with the San Diego Padres, you had very good bullpens. What do you see out of this bullpen where you've gone out and made some veteran acquisitions?
Yeah, I think that's you know, so critical this day and age, Thomas, is the, you know, is the bullpen. You know, any manager, any general manager will tell you how important that is to a team's success. So I think it starts with the closer. You know, even going back to my days as a pitching coach in Anaheim, we had Troy Percival, we had Frankie Rodriguez, and we had great guys in front of them, Shields, Donnelly, Weber, Schoenweiss, others. And then when I got to San Diego, Trevor Hoffman, all-star, Heath Bell, all-star, Houston Street, all-star. And guys in front of them, Mike Adams, Luke Gregerson, Joe Thatcher, guys who performed. So with this group, when you look at Greg Holland, you look at Jake McGee, you look at Mike Dunn, you look at Adam Ottaviano, you got four guys who we project to be stalwarts in our pen. You add the veteran Chad Qualls in there when he bounces back from his arm issue to make an impact in our pen. So our bullpen has a veteran feel to it. We'll have some young guys out there too to cover some innings, but you know, most of the important work will come from veteran guys.
As far as the lineup is concerned, you've got guys who have had some impact in the major leagues, like a Nolan Arenado, Carlos Gonzalez, Charlie Blackmon, DJ LeMahieu. How ready do you sense they are to put this together in a winning team?
Well, you know, I know talking to these fellas in the wintertime and talking to these guys this spring, they're ready. You know, they feel as though they're ready to take that step to, you know, track down the Dodgers and Giants, teams who have been in front of us for a couple of years. And they're up for that challenge. You know, these guys are now solidified as major league players. The next step is to solidify themselves as, you know, perennial contenders. That's where we need to get to. That's where so many teams want to get to, where each and every year you feel good about your chances. But again, that's a collective team effort. You know, that takes all facets. And we got to get the pitching up to speed with that.
And by that leads to my last question here. You've got not just the young pitching that's going to begin your year in the rotation, but some guys coming up through the minors that could have an impact this year. You have young catching also. Is there enough of that depth, or is the depth talented enough to keep you in this race all the way to the end?
Well, that's why we play, Thomas. We'll find that out, but we like the talent. Now, again, we need the talent realized in between the lines. But on a scouting scale, if you look at our players, we have some talent. Now, those guys are, a lot of these young pitchers, a lot of these, you know, these catchers are not overly battle-tested over a length of a season or even a couple years. I mean, these are young players. But what I like about it is the makeup, you know, the ability to gather information, process it, and put it into play. These guys have been sponges as far as information. But, again, it's going to take, you know, quick studies by a number of these players to be big leaguers and contributors right away at a big league level.
Thank you very much, Bud.
You got it, Tom.
Hey, the Dodgers are getting close to opening day, and they're wrapping things up at spring training. So let's catch up with Ken Gernick with everything going on there. I'm Allison Footer. Ken, I guess the last things that sort of remain are the fifth starter. I guess it's down to Alex Wood and Brandon McCarthy. Dave Roberts said he's close to a decision. When do you think that decision is going to be made?
Probably later today. That's when we've been told. I think they just have to get the final sign off all the way around and make sure everybody knows about it. But I think the decision's been made. The guess is that it will be McCarthy as the fifth starter and Alex Wood in the bullpen, mainly because Alex Wood has pitched successfully out of the bullpen and Brandon McCarthy's pretty much been a starter his whole career. Also, if Wood was in the rotation, it would give them four lefties. So instead, they would have three lefties in the bullpen. I mean, it could go the other way, but that's kind of the guessing around here now.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at the pitching, which, you know, I'm always a little suspicious of, just not so much from a talent standpoint, but just from a health standpoint. But I don't know. Things seem to be coming together a little bit, and it does seem like from a starting pitching and in the bullpen that things are shaping up and this team looks pretty strong going into the season?
Well, they have a couple injuries, but they're a lot healthier than they were most of last year. For whatever reason, Scott Kazmir hasn't come back, so he's going to start the season on the DL with all sorts of issues, mechanical and physical, and it's all a little confusing. They've got Pedro Baez, who would be one of the setup men. He's close to being ready, but not quite ready. He's had a bad bone bruise on his pitching thumb, but he is throwing to hitters and close to being in minor league games, and he probably will be up at some time in April. But otherwise, they're in pretty good health, and they've got Julio Urias will be in the minor league camp for a while, just kind of throttling back his innings, trying to protect him for later in the year. He'll probably be up in late April or early May. But otherwise, they have Josh Raven has a groin pull. He was iffy to make the club anyway. So other than that, they're in pretty good shape pitching-wise, health-wise.
Yeah, curious about Sergio Romo, who's kind of by sort of default for several different reasons, but he's expected to maybe assume that right-handed setup role. Is he up for that task? I know he's had he's been questionable here and there. What do you think about him stepping into such an important role?
Well, he's a former closer on a World Series champion, so it's not like he doesn't have some credentials. He doesn't throw hard, but he didn't when he was saving World Series games either. So, I think he's not afraid to be out on the mound. And I think as long as he's healthy, now he has had a back issue this spring after pitching in the WBC, and he didn't pitch well there. The Dodgers have kind of really gone slow on his workload here because he did pitch not only at WBC, but he also pitched in winter ball after being hurt last year. So, he's had arm issues last year. He's had a back issue this year. I think, it's his health at his age. That's the question mark. But if he's healthy, I think that they feel that he not only gives them the experience, of being in tough situations, but also he gives a much different look than all the other hard throwers, especially Kenley Jansen. So they like that contrast. Management likes to have one or two pitchers in the bullpen that kind of throws differently, either with their delivery, maybe sidearm, or in Romo's case, more of a slider than a fastball.
The last question I want to ask you, of course, we have to talk about Corey Seager a little bit. He seems to be recovered from that strained oblique. It's not a big deal that he is not going to play in the exhibition games with the Angels, that he's going to play in minor league games back at the spring training site. Of course, when people hear that, they get a little panicky. It sounds like it's just so he can just be free and get a lot of at-bats and sort of be on his own pace. He's ready for opening day, right?
Well, I think he's going to be physically ready. His swing isn't ready. It's coming slowly. He hasn't been happy with it. And he continues to play in minor league games. Dave Roberts said that he's expected to play in the final freeway series game against the Angels on Saturday. And, unless something weird happens, he will be in the starting lineup Monday for opening day. But whether his rookie of the year swing will be in the lineup, that remains to be seen. The only thing that you can say is that he missed most of spring training last year with a knee injury. And his swing wasn't what he wanted it to be, and he almost won the MVP award. So, past performance, he can get by without a spring training, But whether he's going to be at his best on April 3rd, that may be asking a lot. But he's expected at least to be in the lineup.
Yeah, it's a long season, and I'm sure he will be just fine. Okay, the last thing is you recently talked to Dave Roberts. You asked him a couple questions about previewing the season, so we're going to listen to that interview right now.
From the first day of spring training, I expect off the season, we're going to, try to win every day and get better. And, once October comes, we'll see what happens, but I like our guys.
The depth, especially in the bullpen. You had a deep bullpen last year, and you really used it. Do you have the same depth and quality this year, do you think?
I think so. You know, and I think last year, obviously, we had Joe Blanton, who really was a staple to the pen. Obviously, Kenley, but Joe, with what he did in the situation that he was put in. But I think that we'll know more as the season gets going. But I like the arms. I like the character. And also just our guys understanding what we do as a pen and taking the ball when called upon and trying to put those guys in the right spots. So I think we do have that same depth.
At second base, your big acquisition this offseason was Logan Forsythe. Now, you know him from San Diego, but I think he's an even better player now than you knew then.
Yeah.
What have you seen this spring and the changes that you've seen him make since you were with him in San Diego?
Well, I think that now he's getting a chance to play every day, and he's, you know, cemented himself as a major league player. In San Diego, he was a young player trying to find his way, but the makeup, the DNA, the head, always elite, top end for me, one of my favorite players. And so once we acquired him, you know, the Dodgers fans that love Chase Utley and baseball fans that love Chase Utley, he's cut from that same cloth, and he's a gamer, he's a tough player. And so I just think that he's really asserted himself as a leader already in our clubhouse.
Okay, so we got lightning round here on four key players. Tell me what you feel from what you've seen, spring training of first Clayton Kershaw coming off the back injury.
I think he's healthy. He's dominating. He's back to being Clayton. And I know he's excited about this season.
Rookie of the year, Corey Seager's been hurt most of the spring. Will he be ready? And do you think this will affect him?
It will not affect him. I know he'll be ready. And I think this almost could be a little bit of a blessing, because once the season starts, I'm going to run him out there a lot. So I think for him to have an abbreviated spring for his mind, body, might be not such a bad thing.
Yasiel Puig had an up and down year last year, and this spring, tell me what you think, and has he made the progress that you've hoped for?
His body is way better. He's a lot leaner, and I think mentally he's in a good place. And I think for Yasiel, it's just understanding to trust the process and to continue to get better. And so right now, throughout the spring, he has. And if he continues to trust the process and get better each day, then I think that I'll bet on the results on the back end. But it's a challenge that he's got to continue to be consistent with his work.
And the last one, Julio Urias. And a lot of people back home really want to see him. There's a lot of talk that maybe they won't see him for a while. Kind of a lab experiment here. What kind of spring has he had, and what do you expect to get from him this year?
We expect him to contribute as a starter. And I don't know when that's going to be right now, but we're definitely mindful of his, obviously, innings limits, and we've been in constant contact with Julio, and I'm excited to see him pitch for us as well, but I still think we're trying to be very mindful of his development. But he's a pro. He's definitely, this is a lab experiment because of he's just such a prodigy. But for him to buy into the organization, understand that we have his best interest, makes it a lot easier.
You're getting really good at this.
Try not answering the questions?
Yeah, very good.
Thanks, Kenny.
Good job, Dave. Thank you very
Thanks,
much.
Kenny.
Good luck.
All right.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.